Al, good morning. Hi there. Ho there. Hey there. Welcome to another edition of What's on Your Mind. Brought to you in part today by our friends at Big Deals. Have you bought anything from Big Deals lately?
Oh, yeah, I love Big Deals.
My gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
There's some big deals.
I did fireworks, actually.
On Big Deals. There you go.
Star fireworks, you bet.
Yeah. AM1100theflag.com is the website, and then you click on Big Deals from there and shop. We have a brand new set of customizable clubs mastheads. We're going to auction those off on Thursday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. So in addition to all kinds of items for dining out and, like you said, fireworks, I mean, there's a ton of things there. Thursday, we'll have a new set of Mizuno 919 irons.
Oh.
Mizuno ST200 driver, ST200 fairway wood. You've got a red, white, and blue kilo bag from Mizuno. You've got a 56-degree wedge, a tailor-made black copper TP putter. It's $2,200 in value right there. $2,200 in value, everything you've heard.
And you can win that and then go buy more golf on Big Deals and go use them.
There you go.
We got great courses on there, too.
Same deal. You can go online at am1100theflag.com, click on Big Deals, and then click on Golf to see more info. And have some fun bidding. See if you're the winning bid. 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Thursday. That should be kind of fun. I like that online bidding. Kind of watch it, you know, and keep close eye on what's happening. Just go to am1100theflag.com. I'm doing it right now. When you get there, there's a tab at the top that says Big Deals, news, sports, and other things, but Big Deals. There's permit to carry certificates if you've not received, if you don't yet have your permit to carry. That normally would be an $85 class. You buy it at Big Deals for $42. The Keller's Barbershop gift certificates. Hi-Ho Burgers and Brews. Bappa's Bagels. Get $20 gift certificates from Bappa's and buy bagels for the whole team. It's a great way to go. Rookie Sports Bar and Grill. There is Star Fireworks still on there, by the way.
Ooh.
Kev?
Any reason to light off fireworks is a good enough reason for me.
And there's Everspring Inn and Bismarck is another one. Bloomington, we have Mall of America certificates. We have stays in Devil's Lake, Sleep Inn and Suites, and the Roadway Inn. Spicy Pie Pizza, downtown Fargo, West Fargo, South Fargo, Grand Forks, Minot locations. Thunder Road, right next door, a little laser tag for 10 minutes is a good way to go. I mean, there's gift certificates, $250 for Smile Care Dental. You buy them for $175. Granite City, I could go on and on and on. Don't talk about it enough because it's just there, but if you are not aware of it being there, and wherever you're from, wherever you're going, Bismarck, Dilworth, Fergus Falls, Mapleton, Moorhead, Stanley, Bloomington, Fargo, Harwood, Medora, Newtown, Watford City, Devil's Lake, Minot, Grand Forks, Horace, Monaga, Ray, West Fargo, Dickinson, Kensington, Minnesota, Williston, North Dakota. Businesses from all over. So check it out. Again, am1100theflag.com. Click on Big Deals. On the show today, we're going to chat with Minnesota District 4 State Senator Ken Eakin. Update on the Minnesota legislative session, special session. And Senator Eakin has been quite critical of Governor Walz, which is, well, Ken Eakin's a Democrat. Tim Walz is a Democrat. You don't see too much of that, but I'm pleased to see Ken Eakin standing up for citizens regardless of party to say, you got to recognize Western Minnesota is not Minneapolis. Twin Valley is not the Twin Cities. So we're going to talk about that. Brian Kilmeade from Fox and Friends, he's also on the Fox Nation, has a book, well, he has a number of books, and a lot of them are about important figures in history. And these days they're pulling down statues, including those of Andrew Jackson. Believe it or not, that was the subject of one of his books. Thomas Jefferson is another. George Washington, he's done some great books. So Brian Kilmeade from Fox and Friends here this morning to talk about history. The wind versus coal debate, fast becoming an all-or-nothing battle in North Dakota, Is there another way? I hope so. We're going to talk to North Dakotans for Comprehensive Energy Solutions about that. And then the best-selling author of Blitz, Trump Will Smash the Left and Win. David Horowitz talks about his new book today on the program. So stay tuned for that. I'm going to send you that book free if you are the lucky recipient of our contest proceeds, bounty, whatever you want to call it, all the goodies. Stay tuned for more details on that. So that's our lineup for today. And unless you're reading the evening news or seeing all kinds of people hand-wringing over the November election, you'll like David Horowitz's book because the book is called Blitz. Trump Will Smash the Left and Win. Not a lot of narrative out there to that effect, is there, Kev?
Not really, no. No.
Buckle up, he says. 2020 will be the political ride of your life.
Already is.
It has been. And the nice thing about Blitz, what I liked about the book, is I mean, Donald Trump has been attacked in so many ways. His administration has been attacked in so many ways. You forget. You forget about all the cards they've played. So he does a nice job of recapping the attacks made on Trump. And they're some of the most brutal ever mounted against a sitting president. He talks about the deep-seated hatred the left has of Donald Trump and his policies. And he also talks about how their attacks backfired, turning himself into a near martyr while igniting the fervor of his base. But these are brutal back battles and bitter backlashes and left-wing lies about President Trump, so we're going to hear all about it from David Horowitz today. Noted conservative commentator, prolific author, written a few New York Times bestsellers. Big Agenda.
I've got Dark Agenda is one that
Dark Agenda is another one. Yeah,
I've listened to about half of it. I've got that on my Audible.
Yeah, that's good.
I got to finish it.
Founder and CEO of the David Horowitz Freedom Center in Los Angeles, California. The amazing thing about him, he's a former terrorist.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a radical left-wing liberal, a militant liberal. And decided he'd had enough of that scene. So
woke up.
He's woke in a different way.
In a better way.
In a better way. Yeah. Senator Tina Smith has tweeted out yesterday, the Trump administration rejected Governor Tim Walz's request for aid to rebuild after the recent unrest, even though FEMA found damage that far exceeds the amount that usually qualifies for aid. Minnesota's hurting enough from the pandemic alone. This only adds to our pain. Well, Senator Tina Smith, here's what you need to know. That was self-inflicted pain. That was because that pain could have been avoided, and Minnesota wouldn't take the help of the federal government when it was offered to stop the madness because you kowtowed. You and Governor Walz, you kowtowed.
Mayor Fry.
You coddled these thugs.
They had enough police to make that thing not happen.
You made your bed, now you swim in it.
Amen.
And they also found, they don't just give you money to give you money when damage has been done. If you have the money yourself to do it, if it's not a percentage that disrupts your budgets and economy in a way, that they leave it to you. It should be you. So we'll talk to Ken Eakin about that, too. When we come back on the program, we call What's on Your Mind, brought to you in part today by Chose Investments, KJOSinvestments.com. Monty Chose, Scott Chose, for more than 40 years, bringing plans to life and making dreams come true by delivering expertise and service to anyone wishing to lease office space, buy or sell land, develop office buildings. There's a difference between knowing how to do something and knowing how to really get it done. Find out more at Choseinvestments.com.
Back to work.
We need to put people back to work.
Back to business.
I just like to see people get back to work.
On the front line of news and information.
People need to be working.
The Need to Know Morning Show.
I'm running up and down this hill and the Sons of Thunder drive past me on their bikes looking at me like,
nerd.
What the heck? Hey, bikers run too.
Not those
guys.
Yeah,
but from the cops.
Join Steve, Alex, and Kevin weekday mornings for the Need to Know Morning Show here on the Flat.
Back on What's On Your Mind, 12 before the top of the hour, Senator Ken Ekin, Democrat representing from Twin Valley, representing a good chunk of northwest Minnesota, is joining us today to talk a little bit about the special session that Minnesota's in. And see if there's been any breakthrough in getting the governor and legislative leaders to recognize Twin Valley is different than the Twin Cities. Always a challenge. Senator Ken Ekin, nice to have you back on the program. How are you?
Hi, Scott. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm good. I appreciate your ongoing efforts on this front, especially related to the coronavirus response of trying to get some attention for Western Minnesota and a recognition of its difference. You know, obviously now a second special session, some more time at the state capitol. How's that effort coming?
Well, we did pass in the Senate a bill to remove the governor's powers, his emergency powers, but it's expected to fail in the House today. So because of that, his powers will continue at least for another 30 days. He has to call us back every 30 days to give us that opportunity to rescind those powers if we so choose. And I did vote to rescind those powers. It's the third time that I've done so. I was the only Democrat that voted to rescind the powers yesterday. It actually is fewer votes to rescind the powers yesterday than it was last month, which I think is unfortunate because I do think we need to have a more regional approach, as you said, Scott. We're not, you know, Twin Valley is not the Twin Cities, and we're not Minneapolis, and we shouldn't be treated as such. So we need to get away from this metro-driven, one-size-fits-all approach and pursue a more regional approach that takes into consideration the unique qualities and challenges of different areas. And so for that reason, I'm continuing to push on that. I've spoken directly to the governor about this. More than once, the governor is well aware of where I stand on this. He has been receptive to listening to my concerns. Whether that leads to action remains to be seen, but I'm going to keep pushing on that because I do feel very strongly about that in a number of issues. We need to be looking at things from a regional perspective.
If you and I had him right now with us here and we said, what is the harm in allowing Western Minnesota counties, cities, to take the data that's all well known now. We've got a pretty good dashboard of data to follow these things, but make their own restrictions. What is the argument against that?
Well, I think there are some who are concerned that that certain localities and regions won't do enough to adequately protect from the spread of COVID-19 and that it could spread into other areas. That would be the response that some would give, but I do think that we can pursue a much less rigid, less uniform, more nuanced policy that will, you know, identify and isolate those hotspots. You know, when I first talked to the governor about this early on, when he first initiated the emergency powers, the response then was, well, we don't know where the hotspots are. That's why we need to do things statewide. But now we have the testing available that's necessary to identify those hot spots and to isolate them and without doing all kinds of harm economically to the rest of the state. So I think that we need to start pursuing that. We do, and one of the reasons too that they took more dramatic efforts early on is that we wanted time to build up more ICU beds, time to produce more personal protection equipment, time to produce more ventilators and things of that nature. We've done that. So I think that we have now gotten to a point where we don't have to use this very dramatic, you know, what I consider to be draconian a sledgehammer type approach. We now have the ability to do things much more effectively and in a much more nuanced way.
Is it a case of politically the governor feels pretty good because, you know, his numbers look good, the Twin Cities likes it, so you know, really just power in numbers. He sees his base as really being the Twin Cities and those larger metropolitan areas, and really doesn't need to worry about, you know, what people in Western Minnesota think about their businesses failing for really no reason, right? People understand you're going to take a hit because of the coronavirus and less people in and time shut down. They get all that. You know, nobody said, I've seen very little people even challenge this stuff constitutionally. They just go along with it. But when it's for no reason, when you're doing economic harm to businesses for no legitimate medical reason, it's, you know, tends to make you mad. Is it politically just, you know, too tough? I mean, just a classic case of Western Minnesota, too few of us compared to the metropolitan area?
Well, you hit on a very important issue, Scott. That we are vastly outnumbered. About two-thirds of the people in the state live in the metropolitan area of the Twin Cities. And the governor has to contend with that as well, that he's being pulled in different directions. And when I did talk to him, he did tell me, you know, understand I'm getting all kinds of pressure to crack down even more by some, you know, in the Twin Cities area. And he was, you know, letting me know that he's moving in my direction because he was loosening up restrictions and has been and you know, was listening to us, you know, when we were expressing our concerns. So I think that the pressure from the Twin Cities is extremely powerful. And that's, again, one of the reasons we need to get away from the one size fits all, because whatever policies are made statewide are written for the Twin Cities. And that's why they don't fit in our area. And so I keep hammering on that issue. I think that the governor, you know, understands that. I think that he does get pulled in different directions. However, it is a difficult position he's in. You know, I don't think, and I don't, it doesn't matter what party a governor is from. Being a governor today is an extremely stressful job, no matter what state you're in, because, you know, they're facing a crisis situation here, the likes of which, you know, no previous governors have faced before. So he's got a tough job.
Yeah, he certainly.
But I'm trying to do everything I can to move him more in our direction.
I appreciate that very much. I mean, one example of that is you have a large, you know, percentage of your party that believes the police are the bad guys. Which is, you know, unbelievable to me. And I don't know where the governor's at on that, but I know politically what he has to do. I know you're working on a quote-unquote police reform bill. Do the police need reform in Twin Valley? Do the police need reform in District 4, Senator?
Yeah, and again, you point out another area where, again, we're not Minneapolis. So we shouldn't be, you know, writing law enforcement reform statewide based on what's been happening in Minneapolis. It was a tragic thing that happened to George Floyd. And I think there are some needs for reform in the Minneapolis Police Department, but don't apply that all across the state. The law enforcement is a quite different situation in our area. Law enforcement has enormous respect, and I've seen firsthand, you know, the important work that they're doing and how well-connected law enforcement is to our communities in our area. And so, you know, I have concerns about some of the proposals that are being made in that regard, and I don't think there's enough being said about the good work that law enforcement does and the critically important work that they do for our communities, the vast majority of whom are good citizens doing great work for public service, and we need to recognize that as well, and you know, and understand the dangers that they are facing in order to provide us with the critical public service of safety and public safety. So I do have concerns about what's been happening. There's kind of been a knee-jerk reaction. I think some of the, you know, there's been calls for defunding police, for dismantling police department. I think that goes too far. In Minneapolis, they've been calling for that. The city council, I think it was, goes way too far. And again, it's a knee-jerk reaction in the heat of the moment. I think that we needed to take some time to let things cool down here in order to have a more reasonable evaluation of what took place and what needs to be done.
Was the Trump administration wrong to reject the request from Governor Walz for aid to rebuild after the riots, when the president offered federal troops, which were rejected, and other things that would have helped to mitigate it? I mean, was he wrong to say no to those dollars to Minnesota, do you believe?
Well, I do think that the folks in Minneapolis and the cities where the damage was done, that they're the ones that should have to pay the primary costs of the cleanup. And I do think there were mistakes that were made in not adequately protecting the properties there. But I also believe that as far as federal money, we are a contributor state in Minnesota. We pay in much more to the federal government than what we get back. So whenever there's an opportunity for us to get back tax dollars we've sent out to Washington, I've been supportive of those efforts. And of course, the more that we get back from the federal government, the less that we would have to take out of either the state or the local resources here. And I'm concerned that there's going to be a lot of pressure to provide resources from the state. And I don't want to see resources diverted from the rural parts of the state or greater Minnesota in our area in order to pay for that damage. And if there is help from the state, we want to make sure that it's matched by help for businesses in our area of the state, because our businesses are also suffering and struggling, and we're devastated by what happened with the closures and the restrictions from COVID-19.
Makes sense. One last real quick question. I'm out of time here, but the bonding bill, it looks like a deal is close. Do you think this session is going to be the one where you get a deal?
I think we will. We've got a deal that's kind of come together. It's still a work in progress, but it's being heard today in the Ways and Means Committee in the House. It's a $1.8 billion bonding bill. There's a lot of support for getting a bonding bill done this year because the arguments for it are so strong. I mean, we have low interest rates, so we're getting a bigger bang for the buck. We have a need for work right now because of high unemployment, so put people to work. Also, there's a backlog of deferred maintenance projects that need to be done, so there's multiple reasons why we need to get it done. I do believe that the leaders, Republican and Democrat, want to get a deal done, so I'm cautiously optimistic, but it does require a three-fifths majority, a supermajority to pass.
All right. We'll watch that closely. Thank you, Senator. The time
entangled in this as well.
Breath of fresh air from some common sense. Ken Eakin, Twin Valley Democrat, State Senator of Minnesota, battling for folks there. Thank you, sir. More after this on WZFG, Dilworth, Fargo, Moorhead, USA, 9 o'clock.